Welcome to War Master Podcast Episode 8, The Tomb Kings with Paul and Barry.
Hello, and the title of this today's episode is Tomb Kings, Quantity Has a Quality All of Its Own. That's that a quote, isn't it? That's a quote from Napoleon or something, isn't it?
No, like Napoleon.
But anyway, alright.
Stalin,
yes. So, we're going to be talking about the Tomb Kings. We played a game with Tomb Kings, which is very good. Then we're going to go...
Very quick.
We'll talk about that game. Then we'll talk about the matchup and go into the main topic, which is who are the Tomb Kings. I'm ready with some fluff. Hit you some fluff knowledge. Fluff knowledge bombs.
There we go.
And then we'll go into strengths and weaknesses of the Tomb Kings.
Okay, so what have you been doing this week, Paul?
Okay, so since our last recording, and we are recording on another Wednesday afternoon.
Yeah, so just a week later.
Just a week later from the last one. The date's the 3rd, isn't it? Yes, it's the 3rd of February. I've played two games of NetEpic. Basically, I played a teaching game against Shape down our club of 2,000 points, which went really well, and I'm glad that he really enjoyed it. And then I played a proper game of NetEpic at 4,000 points with Mr. John Webb, a la Smogkong organiser.
Overmeister.
You know, like the Führer. And that was fantastic. That is a good size to play NetEpic. And highlight of me was my Warlock Titan getting killed by a knob, and that's not even misquoting, like some knob shot his wing off, which then...
With a big shooter.
Flashback to my head, blew the head up, and then the Titan fell over, luckily missing everything else around it. But I was like, really? I've just lost 700 points of awesomeness to a knob.
With a big shooter.
He's got a big gun.
And bubbles.
And put it in for more DACA, didn't he?
I quite enjoyed
this NetEpic. And I've also played a game of War Machine because I've been practicing for this Harlow event, Leon's Memorial Tournament, which is on Sunday. I'm determined to take best Merc player out away from Kevin Bryan. That's what I'm going for.
Wow.
So I'm using...
You versus Kevin.
Well, let's of course, if he uses Mercs, he might just double dupe me and not use Mercs. But I want to mention, even though there's no prize of best Merc, I want to mention that I was best Merc. That's what I'm going for.
So, yes.
So, well, achievable aims. Barry, what have you been up to?
Okay, so I played War Machine at 15 points. That's my first game this year, proper game. Well, not that 15 points is a proper game. So that was quite interesting. I played Darius with a Stormwall.
That's 15 points.
14 points, actually.
A whole point spare.
Nothing in the list for a point. It was a bit cheesy, but... I kind of enjoyed it. We're only allowed to win two games, and I won them in about 45 minutes.
Just running it in and jackhammering it for the win.
Yeah, or yeah. Darius won one himself.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because he can knock things down.
Oh, well, he's got a little mini
Quake
thunder.
Quake hammer, it was very useful. And then just pummeled the shit out of them.
Just bang him on the ground. as Harry makes a wanking motion of his
head. So he Quake hammered on the charge, and then just 7 attacks or whatever it was.
And that was that.
Yeah,
fair enough.
What else have we done? I played D&D. That D&D is interesting. Fifth Ed. I've been playing D&D since I was a young lad at like 13. So been playing a bit of D&D. And then
that's with Jeff, isn't it?
Yeah, Jeff. Jeff the Hoarder.
The compulsive hoarder. It's definitely got a condition.
I tell you, he sold some stuff on eBay.
No.
So he had two posters and a ticket from a Fantasy Flight convention back in the 80s. In Manchester, 1984.
Right, yeah.
And he sold two posters, which were all crinkled and crumpled, and a ticket stub, for £450 cash.
What?
So the people in this business have too much money.
Oh my, what? 450 points for a poster?
Pounds, not points. Crumpled posters and a ticket stub.
For 450 quid?
So if you've got any old posters from Fantasy Flight, they're worth money apparently.
Well, oh my god. Well done, Jeff.
Yeah, big win for Jeff. Good on him. Right, so what else we got? That's me done.
Magic the Gathering.
Nah, I did some Magic the Gathering stuff. I do it every Monday.
Yeah.
It's alright. I like Magic. It's expensive though.
Yeah. Okay, so... our next bullet point is 100 subscriber competition. Mm. Barry?
So that finishes midnight tonight. We've got a few entries. We can do with some more. So go to the Facebook page, find the post.
They're not all people we know.
Yeah, some of them are people. At the end of the day, one of the people who likes it is going to win it. We'll draw it, maybe. We'll find a way of doing it on our next podcast. Yeah. We'll draw it live. There you go. We'll send the stuff out to you. Uh-huh, uh-huh. So it ends midnight tonight.
Yeah. So all you have to do is click like. That's all you do. So, point four. Today's match, Tomb Kings versus Bretonians, which I think a bit of a classic matchup as we go. Knights versus skeletons.
God wills it versus...
Undead
God wills
basically, so obviously one of us had to play Tomb Kings because about the episode. Barry's played Tomb Kings a bit, and so Barry took the realms of the Tomb Kings, and we needed like a classic matchup for them, and Bretonians, you know, I took them out, and I really enjoyed that army.
You've played them before, but not the tournament list.
We need to talk about all the whole game, really. Basically, I took a Bretonian tournament army list. So there's the mainstream list and the tournament army list. Now, obviously, if between the two, you would play the tournament
list. I don't rate the mainstream list at all.
No. Bretonians mess with the breakpoint like Nippon do. So only the knights count. Lovely rule. But the main list has some bigger weaknesses, while the tournament list gives you more options. Still has some weaknesses.
Yeah, but you get like Pegasus.
I took a typical pool list, which we'll link in the Facebook as well.
I'll touch on it.
So, which was two bowmen, four men at arms, two peasants with the Grail Reliquary, which makes them Grail Pilgrims.
You should have had more.
You should have four of those. Seeing what they can do, I would have done. Two squires, three knights, two grail knights, two of the Pegasus knights, which are the new thing to the tournament list, two trebuchets, and a range of five characters. I put a general and a hippogriff because I can, because it's cool.
But you didn't do anything.
Yeah, but I...
So it was a waste of 100 points. But
80, yeah, so it doesn't matter.
Sword.
Oh, and a sword, yeah. So 90.
90,
doesn't matter.
Okay.
I still wanted to do it. Right, and...
That was them.
We don't want to go long into the Bretonians because we're going to do a podcast about Bretonians.
Yes, that's true. We're going to do two, probably.
Probably, yeah. An original and a tournament list. But yeah, the Rockstar... Like, this Grail Pilgrims and... It was a real fun list to use, actually. I took the two trebuchets, put them together...
Blindfight most of it. It was really good.
To begin with, yeah, because you can't move them once they're thick. They're big. They're twice the size artillery pieces. They can't move when they're set up, but they kick out four attacks each for no armor save. And I blinkered them with some men at arms to like protect them, and they fire indirectly. They are really good artillery pieces. Actually,
they're very good against stuff defended or fortified because they ignore it.
Yeah,
effectively. Exactly. Well, they don't ignore it, but they're hitting on six whether you're in the open or wherever you are.
And so. Barry, if you just want to quickly talk about the Tomb Kings list you took, and then we'll talk about the game, and then we'll go into it.
Okay, right. So, quantity has a quality of its own. So we went big, obviously. I had 11 units of skeletons, which is a fair wad. We had 4 units of bowmen. That's the minimum. And bowmen are all right, but I wanted to take... I knew I was focusing Bretonian, so I wanted to take...
I would say with the 11 units of skeleton infantry, 11 of one choice is... The only list I've run which has more than that is Skaven clan rats.
Right.
A list I've got that I want to use is 12 clan rats. So that's how... That is impressive. 11 of a choice.
And for somebody who loves painting, the thought of painting 11 units of skeletons... No. All right, so we had 4 units of cavalry, who were actually better than I expected. I think I'd always, in my mind, thought they were 6 up save, but 5 up save... 2 attacks.
Well, we'll go through the strings.
4 units of chariots, 2 units of carrion, 2 skull chuckers, 1 tomb king. We had 3 lich priests. We didn't go for 4 because I wanted to improve my breakpoint. And we had 1 mounted on a zombie dragon with a sword of might. And so, that is that. 14 breakpoint, 27 units.
These two armies played against each other. Yeah, Barry won again. I'm on a bit of a losing streak for this podcast.
Can you guess how many it is?
No. Go on.
Well, we played 7 games. Go on.
How many have I lost?
How many have you won?
What? I don't know, 5?
No,
I've lost 5.
They've lost 6.
Oh, damn.
Do you know which one you won?
When I was dwarves.
I was Orcs, I can't remember. I think you were Empire.
Okay.
But it's...
No, well, I used to win...
Don't worry. It'll leave now.
The tale of the game was that Barry won 4-3. So that was 4 knight units he took.
Four proper units.
And we played the game. We did 4 turns. We're playing our 4th turn.
I was playing second in the 4th turn.
Yeah, and the game, we played it, we finished it after 69 minutes. So under an hour and 10 minutes to set up, play, do the game.
And setting up took ages for me.
Yeah, that took a long time because you've got a horde army. Now, obviously, a Bretonian list, when you catch it, can finish quite quickly because you need less units to kill. But still, that was an out that we we were thinking about.
Yeah, there was another unit nearly went.
Saying we played that game at that time, and we were still thinking about it. And it's like I said during the game because we've had a request to video to record games we play. Actually, because this one used tokens, that would probably show up on a camera better, the tokens, than the models. Actually, yeah. you might be able to see the tokens clearer on a camera from an overhead camera than you would the models. You could tell them apart. I just say
it's something I think about. I think the problem is you have to get the camera above the table somehow, rather than on one end, because the other end of the table would just look. You wouldn't see anything.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, so that was really good because, like I say, we allow 2.5 hours for games in our tournaments, and we just played one in 1 hour and 10 minutes. There we go. Fantastic.
What helped me was the fact that I failed like 6 consecutive orders. So for more than a turn, I was getting so frustrated. Like an entire turn plus half of another turn.
Yeah, the language that came out of you after one of those fail orders was quite colourful.
Two turns running, my carrion went to charge his trebuchet.
Yeah.
And they.
Trebuchets.
Trebuchets, yeah. And 2 turns running, they didn't do it.
So the tale of the game was that Barry bunkered into 2 woods with his infantry, and I had anticipated that, so I set up my Grail Pilgrims and infantry to counter that. And they were doing, well, unfortunately, the game ended before the Grail Pilgrims got into combat, but I was shooting them, attritioning off stuff, that was good.
The trebuchets did well.
I was aggressive with the Pegasus Knights, and maybe if I was playing more Bretonians, I really enjoyed the list. If I was playing more Bretonians, would I use them that way? I don't know.
You had to use one to get the skull chuckers.
Yeah, that was a good trade.
Yeah.
Because once I had them,
the second one you traded against my carrion.
Yeah. And once I had your artillery, I had the range of the game. So attrition wise, I'm going to continue. But then I don't know.
Trades were fair, but the problem is, in order for you to make those trades, you gave away half your breakpoint.
Mm.
Which is nothing else
exactly.
To play
and
with.
Which wouldn't have been a problem, except that I led with a unit of Grail.
Oh, this was horrific.
This is how Barry won the game. Is I sent a unit of Grail Knights into Barry's chariots. It was a brigade of 4 chariots. I damaged 2 off. With artillery fire, so 2 units left. So I sent
they're all in line.
I sent my Grail Knights 3 stands against 2 units of chariots, which was 4 stands basically contacted.
Yeah, but so you took 6 shooting on the way in.
I only took 1 wound.
1 wound on the way in.
So we start that combat. 3 Grail Knights rolling 5 dice each, 15 dice against your 4 stands that were touching of chariots, going to roll 12 dice.
Yeah,
I'd taken 1 wound on the way in. Anyway, I rolled on my hits. I got 10 hits. I remember I was like, oh, that's good. And then Barry made...
No, it was more than 10 hits. It was 12 hits.
12 hits or something. I rolled very well. And then Barry countered with...
So it was like 10-5 ups and 2 wounds.
Yeah, 10-5 up, 2 wounds. And I was like, what? I'm like... And yeah, so obviously
and
I lost...
I think I won the combat base 5.
Yeah, and I rolled average for my saves and your hits. And so I lost. I got complete rubber lance syndrome. my Grail Knights, instead of smashing a unit and probably damaging the second over attrition, lost, got themselves killed, which allowed you to follow up into other knights, which won you the game.
Yeah.
Basically. Those.
But the flip side would have been, if it had gone properly for you...
Yes.
And maybe you should have tricked your general into that one.
I don't know. But like, anyway, I anticipated on winning, not losing.
Yeah, yeah. You'd have taken out all my chariots,
yes.
Effectively.
Yeah, exactly.
And we'll talk about later how important the chariots are, but they are very important.
Mm. Anyway, so, I bounced. My glorious pride of the Ed Bretonia, the best of the best.
How much are they? 140?
120, because they had an extra attack on the charge.
Just 1 attack extra.
So, yeah, that did not go well. But that allowed Barry to then get kills where he wasn't going to and won the game. And that was the tale of the game. But it was cool. It was... I mean, the table's looking really good, actually, for scenery-wise.
It's funny you made me set up scenery. It's kind of, I wanted to play on some deserts.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, like, Bretonians don't want a lot of scenery. So I was like, if I set up the scenery, subconsciously I'm going to try and...
So what happens when you play Wood Elves?
That'd be a problem. but yeah, I was like, I better make... I mean, that's the kind of thing where... okay, you get somebody else to set up the scenery, but obviously we don't have that option. So I was like, Barry, you better set this scenery up, because I can't, I know I can't, even when I'm trying not to, I will.
Yeah, it was funny that the fortified piece didn't come out.
Yeah, yeah, so we had a fortified piece. Yeah, and I was like, right, I won the table. I was like, I'm taking that fortified piece. I'm not going to use it, but I don't know when you'd have it.
Yeah, but it wasn't on the table initially. It was funny. Yeah. But anyway, but the trebuchet would have done work against that anyway.
Okay, so that was our game. So, who are the Tomb Kings?
This is your world.
For me, it's like,
I know what they look like.
Let's just give Barry a chance to say something. Barry, who do you think the Tomb Kings are?
I don't do fluff.
Well, what do you think they are?
They're undead dudes from the desert.
Undead dudes from the desert.
Egyptians. Well, I'll talk a little about the outro music. Finding an Egyptian-themed outro song that wasn't the Bangles was quite tricky. Because we're not having war like an Egyptian. So I picked a song, and it's for Big Darren Wordland, the song.
Okay,
so in my mind, that's what I think the Tomb Kings are.
Okay.
The song at the end.
No, you're not completely wrong. Okay, so Tomb King fluff. Fantastic bit of fluff. Okay, the whole race of Tomb Kings. Now, I'm going to say the land is called Nakraken. I don't know how you pronounce it, but that's what I'm going to call it. I'm going to call it the Big N, all right? That's the country, the Big N. Basically, they're a race of humans, which is around thousands of years ago. So elves came. They were the first like proper human civilization in the old world.
Were they brought by the old ones?
No. So basically, before the empire's founded, which is in about 2,000 years old, there was obviously humans have been around a long time. But they were mostly savage tribes. Apart from these guys in the deep south, in Araby. No, not Araby. Nakraken. Yeah, Big N. And they were humans who like built a fantastic civilization, which is obviously very Egyptian in themes. So they're doing really well, and they were like so like confident themselves that there's a brilliant bit of fluff is when they first make contact with some dark elves. Instead of they think of them as savages. They think the dark elves are uncultured and like who are these like jokers like with stupid ears? Like, yeah, we're far better than them. So this what brought this kingdom low is Nagash. Now, I will shout out a series of books from the Time of Legends books called Nagash the Sorcerer, Nagash the Unbroken, and Nagash Immortal by Mike Lee. This is a fantastic series of fantasy novels. I would say they're the best Oldhammer fluff novels that I know of. Because this guy, Mike Lee, they've come out relatively recently, but he manages to write a story where Nagash is the main person, the reason the Tomb Kings exist. And he was never good. Nagash was a human sorcerer once, a leech priest. And he wasn't wronged by somebody. He wasn't like, oh, that mate turned me bad because somebody didn't love me. Daddy didn't give me enough.
He was just always bad, was he?
He was just always, basically, in the culture, he was the eldest son. And in the culture, the eldest son goes into the priesthood rather than follows the king.
Like Catholic, yeah.
Yeah, so he's the son of... He's a prince, but he's going to have to be a priest. Doesn't want to be. He wants to rule. He wants power. Why? Just because he's evil. That's why. You know, like, as well, like, 'cause I want to be in charge of everybody. And it's fun. It's a great story because the way it works is it drifts back and forth in time, like glimpses past and the relative history, and it shows races go at each other, you know, like the living versus the undead. The consequences of war are fantastically done. Normally in fantasy novels, people just hit each other and there's no consequences, are there? Somebody dies, but everybody's happy. It all ends happily ever after. Not in this series of books. Basically, when Nagash comes to power and is using undead for the first time, obviously a war against the Big N, the Krakens, happens. And they are decimated. Even though they win the war, they still have lost so many people fighting that they're damaged for generations afterwards. And it's just fantastically written. So that's a really good series of books to read if you want to be a know what two kids.
Audio books? Yeah,
you get audio books. Yeah,
of this?
I'm pretty sure you can.
Okay, well, I'll have a look into it. It's like big books.
They are. I mean, the last one, Nagash Immortal, is about twice the size of one of the others. But they're great. I mean, obviously, and during his story, Nagash fights Skaven, and I love Skaven.
Yeah.
That's basically the way these books do it is fantastic. Nagash, in Nagash the Unbroken, he is crippled after being defeated by, and he finds Cripple Peak, which is f- full of warpstone. He's like, when he has to, and he's basically a beggar by this point, and he like eats some warpstone. He's like, damn, that shit's good. And he's like, yeah, and he like realizes he can use it as power, and he finds this mountain, like, you know, and starts getting undead and mining Cripple Peak. Anyway, Skaven turn up because they love warpstone, and I just love the way basically that. And I was reading this, I was like, "There's going to be a fantastic epic now book about Nagash versus the Skaven." No, next chapter is 1,000 years later. They're still fighting. it's fantastic. It's just like that. Like he said, obviously he's undead. They just keep coming, and the Skaven like have got even they're starting to notice like a drain on a generation. It's like, hang on a sec, everybody we send dies.
What is going on?
It's like actually noticing this war for once. Brilliant, brilliantly done. Into more relevant, recent fluff, in the Warhammer The End Times, the first book is called Nagash, and that's a really good, that's the best book of the End Times book. Obviously, The End Times gets some really bad plot holes in it, and obviously it kills our favourite world, sadly, spoiler. But Nagash, the End Times book, is fantastic. If they'd written, say, five books of that quality, that would have been fantastic. Sadly, the best came first in that series of books. And Nagash is there, like, in modern, like, old hammer. So year 2500, he's back again, and he's, like, kicking ass and taking names. And there's a great model of him in old hammer, 28mm scale. It's lovely, but now it's like, now what is he? A god of death in Age of Sigmar bullshit? And he's okay. I mean, it's just like, yeah.
He's the guy, the unkillable guy.
He was great in Warhammer the game. Like, when he was in 28mm scale, he was a 1,000-point character. And like, you'd own, and it was like, he was so many
points.
This
is a game that's played at 1750.
2,400 okay, normally. 2000. Anyway, you couldn't take him, basically. And then they changed the Lords and Heroes so you could. But if you took a game with Nagash, it like that was quite fun. But he obviously, he's Mr. Undead. You wouldn't see him on the table, would you? He's like, he is Mr. Undead. He's like, of course he's good. No one's better than him.
Yeah.
And anyway, in the translation...
That always freaked me out about the scale in Warhammer Fantasy. Why would Teclis be with like half a dozen archers and some reavers?
He wouldn't.
Yeah, exactly.
They never would. They wouldn't even be in most of the Warmaster games.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, why would you have a steam tank on the table?
I don't know. I never really liked the scale of.
No, it's completely wrong. If you're a fan, I'm a fan of the fluff, and yeah, Nagash would not even bother himself. Like, yeah, get out of bed for this. Anyway. Then after Warhammer ended, and you know, the Age of Sigmar, he's in Age of Sigmar, but he's like, I say, like some god, and it's just complete nonsense. And it's a shame because I don't really consider Age of Sigmar to be even that same world anymore.
Well, it isn't, is it?
Well, yeah, I know it's not. I mean, it reminds me of Thor and the world, the mythical worlds of Asgard and bull rubbish.
That's
in there. That's how I see it. It's like, anyway, you've basically things in Age of Sigmar. You've got interstellar travel and guys holding hammers. It like, it don't make sense.
Bolters.
It doesn't make sense. They haven't got storm bolters yet. Give them a chance. No, okay.
The repeat of crossbows. They're storm bolters.
This is not a whine about Age of Sigmar.
No.
But like, so the Tomb Kings themselves, basically Nagash, after his first proper rise to power, raised the whole world of undead, raised. And he was going to roll over the whole world. Everybody who's ever died, raised. Right? And he was going to blink out like a typhoon to a candle of life. And he was laid low by Skaven, basically. Skaven planted a fell blade into King Alcazar, who chopped Nagash up. You know, and save the world. And so Skaven are really the best.
The good guys.
The good guys.
Yeah.
that's why I love Skaven. I misunderstood. anyway, and Nagash. Not all the dead fell apart. And the Tomb Kings in Nakraken stayed around. And there's all these Tomb Kings who have been promised eternal life and risen to find that they're dead skeletons rolling over nothing. And like, and they're annoyed. So, to say the least. So, the Tomb Kings are the undead away from Nagash, basically. The vampire counts, came from the humans that bought that drunk everlasting life, you know, like life, and became vampires. Nagash is... You know, that's who the Tomb Kings are, basically. They're a great army. Yeah, they're a really fluffy army. Fantastic.
Nice bit of fluff. Fluff bunny.
Yes.
Okay. Right, so we'll talk a little bit about the Tomb Kings army list. So they have some army rules, which make them a little bit different to most other armies. They're beyond revulsion, it says. So basically, they're They don't suffer a command penalty for enemies within 20 centimetres. They don't suffer a command penalty for terrifying troops. And they can never be confused. So they're the plus points. That's as good.
They're big army rules, basically.
On the negative, just let me get the negative out of the way. They never, ever, ever act on initiative. The only thing that happens on initiative is your birds, your carrion can fly back. That's it. So, for example, today when Paul had a unit of Pegasus Knights in the middle of my army, literally right in the middle of three or four brigades, I had to make a dice roll to attack them, and I failed three dice rolls and didn't attack them. They just stayed there for the whole turn.
Yeah.
And then charged me again.
So the army, this is an example of how War Master is such a good game, in that a few changes to core rules make an army play so differently. The fact that they're dead and they don't have initiative is massive.
Humongous.
Yeah, but dictates really how the whole army plays. It's fantastic. It's just like, but then they have no penalties of being alive. They don't care about, confusion.
That's but they have also, another rule they have is, we'll talk about it now, is that apart from the general, everybody else is a wizard, so you've only got 20 centimetre command bubbles.
Yeah, because they're not naturally alive, are they? They're dead. So they have to have wizards to keep them going.
So even if you compare them to lizardmen, who have a similar rule with the 20 centimetre command bubbles, they can still use initiative. So when you get near stuff just kind of works itself. You kind of charge on initiative.
Because the rank and file of the undead are automatons, they won't fall apart without a wizard around, but they won't do anything either. They'll just be there.
Yeah, so generally you're working with leadership 8, which isn't affected apart from terrain, dense terrain, and losing stands. But you have to be able to roll an 8, and like those six
hard 8s,
those six checks that I made on the bounce that I failed them. Like, most of them were 8s, but you've got to be able to roll an 8, otherwise you're not doing anything.
You can't improve it. The only thing they only care about casualties, which represents broken magic, basically.
Yeah.
And terrain.
Terrain.
Yeah. That's all they care about for command.
Okay. Right, so we'll talk about the first unit is skeletons. Now, these are... they're probably the worst infantry in the game.
But you've got to factor in the whole the whole no confusion factor, the undead rules. You've got to factor that into what they
are. You do.
So, I mean, I'm looking at it.
But, so, skeleton infantry, we have two attacks.
We'll do this like we normally do. You lead, I'll then come in with the next unit.
Right, so two attacks, three hits, six up armour, they're 30 points, and you have a minimum of two. And you have a maximum of how many models you can own. Because it's a lot. Not only do you need a million models to use...
You need raised ones.
Yeah, which I've got no raised ones today, but you need raised ones too. So, they're cheap. They're cheap. You have to take them. They can work in numbers, but yeah, I don't really have a lot of positives to say about them. I take them. I took a lot of them today to get my break up, not because of their combat prowess. If you ever get into combat with them, they lose generally.
Yeah, I mean that's not really what they do, is it?
you've got 11 units of them. They don't fight.
Not really. I mean the thing you they massively shunt up your break point. That's what they do. And if when they do get into fight, they've got to like be in brigades of four, haven't they? And just to swallow it with numbers.
I don't know, it doesn't always work. I think when you tried it against my high elves, you were playing Vampire Country, you had a similar masses of them, and they just evaporate as soon as anything gets stuck into them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I played extremely defensively. I don't think I moved any of them further forward than about 30 centimeters from my board edge.
Yeah, I mean, Tinkins are quite a defensive army, really. Okay, so that's who the skeleton infantry are. Then you also have next list is skeleton bowmen. In fact, let's play Git from here because we're gonna. It says skeleton bowmen, who are two attacks each with one shot, three hits, no armor. You've got 45 points a unit, and you've got to take two of them, so you're going to take four of them, and you probably wouldn't take any more. The difference is like when archers, like you put these in front of say a unit of archers in front of three units of skeletons in column. The archers, when they get shot, it doesn't matter. There's no confusion, so as long as they weren't destroyed by the shooting in a drive back over, disrupted, they just don't go anywhere. I mean, they are that is a really strong thing for them, is that there's no problems for you're going to be able to move that unit again.
Yeah, and also they shoot as well as anybody else, apart from holly elves and wood elves.
Yeah, they're just as good shots as anything.
Still 30 centimeter range.
Yeah.
They have no armour, but you wouldn't expect them to have any armour.
Yeah, you play the game at 2,000 points, you're going to take four units because you have to, but you probably won't take any more.
I did think about taking 8 units of bowmen and then 8 units of skeletons behind them. So just like a...
And just all of them dead.
Yeah, it's a wall of undead.
That's what they are, right.
It's certainly a tactic. I didn't fancy it against Bretonnian, though.
Yeah. No.
Because you wipe out the skeletons and the bowmen and then the skeletons behind it, I think, pretty easily.
I've seen people play Toon King's armies where they take 4 units of skeleton infantry, 4 units of skeleton bowmen, and do nothing with them.
And that's it?
Yeah. That's it.
And everything else.
Yeah, I've seen.
But the break would have been way lower.
Exactly. 40. Exactly. But that, I've seen people play that, and they literally have these four small brigades or two big ones, and they just don't do anything with them. They just leave them behind.
Okay. Well, okay. So next one: skeleton cavalry. Their cavalry, obviously, 2 attacks, 3 hits, 5 of armor, and they're 60 points with no min max. They were better than I thought. I think in my head I had them up with 6 of armor, which I just discounted them for 60 points, but they've got 5 upon them. They're all right.
They've only got 2 attacks compared to most cavalries of 3, but they are cavalry. They can do what cavalry can do.
What I needed them to do is be cavalry.
Yeah,
it's not necessarily do any damage, just be able to chase things, because lots of stuff in Paul's list without cavalry and chariots, I wouldn't have been able to engage, and certainly wouldn't be able to kill them.
Yeah. I mean, when they're only 60 points, you can take a lot of them, and have a brigade of cavalry, you send them in to fill up the frontage, then move the others round for another order to get round behind. That's how you can use them.
But you could do that anyway.
But I'm saying, right,
but
normal cavalry are like twice the points these are.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have a brigade, you could easily have a brigade of 4 of them for the cost of 2 units in a normal army.
Yeah.
2 cavalry units. So they have numbers, but that's what undead are all about.
Indeed. Right, so chariots, Paul?
So skeleton chariots obviously are chariots. These are the best unit of the game. They're the rock stars. They are 3 attacks with 1 shot each, 3 hits, 5 of armor save, and they're 110 points. And you can have min max 3, so you could have up to 6 in a units in a 2,000 point list. They are the big. They are the heaviest hitters in the undead and tomb
kings
list.
By a long way,
because they roll 5 attacks on the charge if it's in the open, because it's chariots, and they have that random shooting attack as well. So again, they're just as good shots as anything.
Yeah,
and tomb kings are all about their chariots. When they were alive, they had chariot armies, and chariots are their thing. It's how the royalty got about. Your tomb king didn't walk; he went around alone. Your king went around on a chariot. Again, very Egyptian. You're going to have some of these in an army. These are your punch. So put them in with a zombie dragon. Backing them up, and that's your best attack coming in.
Yeah. Okay, next one, Carrion. They're monsters, so 2 attacks, 3 hits, 6 of armor save, and they're 65 points with a maximum of 1 per 1,000.
You're going to take 2, aren't you?
You're going to take 2. They're cheap. Yeah. They can do a lot. They can do all the things that flyers
do. They're not formed wrong. They're formed correct for flyers.
Yeah, that's a big thing.
They're better than harpies.
And harpies aren't much cheaper than that.
No, but I think the harpies points cost is relative to the army list they're in.
Yeah.
And these ones don't have initiative, do they, Carrion?
No, so that's absolutely right. Yep. But they can still home back.
Yeah,
but no, they were good. Definitely 2.
Bone Giant, next one, is a monster. There's 3 monsters list in the Tomb Kings, and he has 6 attacks, 4 hits, a 4 up armor save, and some other unique rules where he just can't go with anybody else. He gives a -1 command, so he can be in a brigade, but he gives a -1 command belt when he's in because he's hard to order.
Which is just what you need.
But
the Lich Priests ignore that.
It's
only for the Tomb King.
It's a bit of a strange one.
I think they think it's hard enough.
You don't take Bone Giants, do you?
I tend to stay away from monsters in general.
Just in general. So this guy, when he charges in the open, he's going to do 8 attacks, and he's got a 4 up armor save, and 1 on 1 stand. He's, say, his points cost of, again, which is 125... bit pricey, I suppose, for what you are. It's something. Basically, in a Tomb King list, if you take units like Bone Giants and Sphinxes, your breakpoint will come a lot down.
Or you don't take chariots. If you look at the chariots cheaper, it does 15 attacks in the open.
Yeah, compared to the giants.
And it has 9 wounds.
Again, compared to the Command Giants, 4. Yeah, so just on a pure dice math, you'd use your chariots.
The only thing that's different is obviously you've got terror on the giant that you don't have on the chariots.
You
can bring it in.
You can bring terror in. Yeah. So I think they kind of lose out a bit, Bone Giants. I did see a very nice army done with Tomb Kings where they used, instead of the Bone Giant model, they used actual 28mm scale skeletons, which is fantastic. I thought much better than a Bone Giant. They look proper giant. Because this is one of the original
28mm skeleton?
Yeah, it's a normal.
Oh my god!
I know, it looked great. Like, it was like a tomb guard, and it just looked cool.
Right.
You know, I think it fitted the army better than the actual Bone Giant.
Who's like puzzled,
tiny, really. Yeah. It's like, it doesn't work. So I would say, if you're going to take Bone Giants, go buy two plastic skeletons, job done.
Okay. Who's next? Sphinx.
Yep.
So monster, four attacks, six hits, a three up armor save, and it's 150 points. Yowzers.
A three plus armor save.
A three plus armor save it doesn't help against cannons. Three plus armor save.
But three plus, I mean, it's because it's.
There isn't much apart from the steam tank with the three plus.
Like three plus.
Six hits.
True. Yeah, it's
no, that's a lot.
No, with a three up armor, I mean, this guy is a reverse. Most giants have a lot of attacks, but are more killable. This one is the other way around. He's like much more defensive with just four attacks, though.
But what do you do with him?
I don't know, really.
You don't want to put him in with skeletons because the skeletons get killed and he gets run away with the skeletons.
Yeah, he can be killed. He can be hurt. A sphinx. So if you take three wounds, he's then damaged up. But yeah, I don't know really what you do with him. But it would you again might be an interesting one for like a hobby, like hobby wise. That polar fox, if you can find some interesting models for them.
Well, not the GW one. That's a mess. I don't know that at all.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But again, when would you use it? You'd have to be doing 3,000 point games before I'd even look at them.
Yeah, I suppose so. So probably not going to get seen in tournament play. Skullchucker, undead of two lots of artillery. Skullchucker, three attacks, three hits, no armor save, and it's 85 points for a one stand. Basically, this is your rock lover. Yeah, no, simple, complete. Totally the same.
Well, apart from the four of confusion.
Oh yeah. Well, okay. So yeah. I mean,
they're throwing you your skulls.
Yeah. Your skull chuck is chucking skulls, and it does confusion on 4, 5, or 6. So
which is big.
Basically, if you're taking artillery, you're going to take two of these. You're going to put them together, and when they hit something, they're going to really hurt it.
And cause confusion generally.
But probably the amount of damage they do the gold confusion anyway.
Maybe.
Yeah, anyway. But this is almost a guarantee that it will cause confusion.
Yeah, because if you shoot two of them, you're only hitting...
That'd be six dice.
So, yeah, six dice. So, yeah, you're only hitting three.
Bah. Okay.
So if you're rolling a six up, you're not going to get confusion. If you're rolling four up, you probably are.
Yep.
Yeah, they're good. Bone throwers, I've never used these. I don't even like them in any list. I think the biggest problem with bone throwers is the range, isn't it?
Would you want to talk about what they are?
Okay, so... Bone throwers, so they got one attack, so it's one. Two hits, no armour, and they're two per stand.
Yes.
And they're 65.
So the bolt throwers, rules are basically, it gives no armour save, and it does one attack per stand, it's like pinging through.
Yeah.
So in line, just one attack. You know, against a guy in column, it would do three attacks. There's two of them. So a unit of these firing at a unit in column will do six dice with no armour save.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
But it's the range
40.
I mean, it's only 10 centimetres more than bows.
No, it's range 40 and you've got, do you want to be spending orders trying to get them into position when in Tomb Kings really? Like, because there's no initiative, so...
And again, it's one of those things that if you start using these as well as Sculpture, because you've got no points left for anything.
Yeah, so, again, Barry doesn't use them. Jury's out, really. Like,
it's not out for me.
Okay, well, I say. Okay, and then we roll into the characters. So I'll just mention them all. You've got a Tomb King, a Leech Priest. So that's it. Two characters. Tomb King, General. He's 130 points with normal general rules, so unlimited command. But then you've got just wizards. So core rule of Warmaster is wizards can only give commands in 20 centimetres. That's all you've got in Doom Kings apart from the general.
And you don't want to use him early.
No! Then there's two mounts. There's a zombie dragon, your standard flying terror thing, and a lich chariot, which is just a chariot, plus one attack for 10 points, basically a sword.
Sword of Might.
So their command values are 9 and 8.
That's pretty generic.
With the Tomb King, he also has a rule that he allows a one game ability of extra dice.
You need to remember to do that.
Which you need to remember to do that. Okay. I mean, again...
And it's only for one unit.
Yes, yeah. I mean, coupled with their limited no initiative and their limited command distances makes Tomb Kings by default a defensive army because you just can't physically... do big flanking manoeuvres with them.
No.
Really.
No, you can't. No. Yeah. because you have to take your general with you to be able to do that, yeah. And then the general's expands.
So when we come onto strengths and weaknesses, that's a clear weakness. Clear strength to counter that is the undead spell. So Barry, do you want to talk?
So the first one is the signature spell, Raise Dead. So it's a 5 up to cast range, 30 centimetres. You don't need to be able to see, but you do need to have a combat. Which for a couple of turns I didn't have any.
No, and it doesn't matter if it's a combat of like weird things, it's just a combat.
Yeah. And if you do manage to roll that 5 up, you can bring a new unit of skeletons into the game and they don't count for a jack. It doesn't matter, you kill them, you can put
so
completely disposable.
I think this Raise Dead spell is hands down the best spell in the game. Because the fact that you create a new unit, okay, they're rubbishy skeletons, but they count for nothing. No victory points, no break point, they're completely expendable. The way you bring them in is you're going to bring them into behind a unit of, in the rear of a unit you're fighting, so they can't be directed attacks directing on, and then when the enemy...
And they do provide attacks.
They provide attacks, and when the enemy is pushed into them, they're going to die. So they're good at attrition, they're good at attack, at defence... They're just, it's just hands down the best spell.
It is. And how many times did they get it off today?
Well, you didn't, but like you would cast it. That's the thing. It's like,
I tried.
But this is the whole, I mean, the rate's exactly the same spell for vampire counts. And this is one of the big reasons why you play Tomb Kings.
The danger is that it kind of sucks all your wizards towards one combat.
Yeah, trying to do it.
At least you're kind of, your rest of your army like kind of out of range.
And in the other arm, like in the vampire counts list, the necromancers can do this and it doesn't matter. But in the Tomb King list, the Lich Priests are also the guys giving the orders, and you're going
to
put them out of position
to try and get the spell in.
So it's problems.
And I only went with three rather than four wizards.
Yeah, a guy, Nick, we know down our club, he plays Tomb Kings, he does the units with, he does ghosts. So when he raises the unit, he puts a unit of ghosts down.
Yeah. Which is. From another faction.
Yeah, which is quite cool. But yeah, so there's that Raise Dead. Good.
Yeah, as Paul says, it's the best game.
I think it is.
Spell in the game.
Yeah.
I prefer a different spell later, but it's more reliable. So, Touch of Death. 4 up to cast, range touching. I actually use this quite a lot in the game today. So the wizard basically does 3 attacks in combat.
Yeah, because it's all right. It's a 4+ to cast.
So there's no, you get armor saves. It's nothing really spectacular. Doom and Despair, this is my favourite. 4 up to cast, range 60 centimetres. You don't need to be able to see. If you cast a spell successfully, the unit cannot charge.
Very good spell, range 60. There's not many in the game that are very easy to cast.
Range 60. I definitely spammed this out early game. And it plays havoc. Because Paul sets up his charges, then can't charge. And then do you do with the knights?
Like, you just go like, God wills it! And you can't. Okay.
What do you then do with the knights?
God says no.
They're just there on the hill, waiting.
Yeah.
Waiting. And then the final spell is Deathbolt, 5 up to cast range, 30 centimetres. This is your average...
Your shooty spell.
You can be driven back.
Yeah. It's very common in most armies.
But this one, they don't get armor save. Sometimes you do, sometimes you don't.
I think that as a spell selection, this is one of the best, and maybe the best, spell selection there is.
I think if it had... an ability to get you to move, like the
Command spell. That would make it bonkers good, wouldn't it? Maybe Vampire Counts then have the best.
Was it Van Hell's
Dance? Van Hell's Dance Macabre. Maybe Vampire Counts are the best.
Yeah, maybe. But do they get Doom and Despair?
I don't know about looking at it. But this isn't about Vampire Counts.
It's not your right.
But they do get... Well, okay, so the Raise Dead, as I say, is defence and attack. It's everything. Touch of Death is an attack spell. Doom and Despair is a defence spell. And Deathbolt's an attack spell. So you get 2 attack spells, 1 defense spell, and 1 everything
spell.
1 utility spell.
Yeah, I think the favourite spells in the game for me are the spells that allow you to get a command off.
Yeah.
Because they really, really mess about.
And again, as I said before, why you play Warmaster is the army about the ability to command an army, and that is another attempt at commanding the army, isn't it? So we've gone through the Tomb Kings list. So strengths and weaknesses. So let's start with strengths, shall we?
Okay. Well, the number one strength would be the wizards, I think, and therefore the spells, because you're not taking the wizards because of the command values.
No.
So the wizards and the spells.
Chariots are also high on the list for the strengths, and the skull chuckers and the carrion we've listed as the strength. So we're going to say magic, chariots, skull chuckers, and carrion are your strengths.
Not that carrion are game breaking in themselves.
But you have a unit of flyers.
Which are facing the right way.
Yes, which are facing the right way.
And they're cheap.
And they're cheap, yeah.
And that makes a lot of difference. You can do a lot with those flyers.
Yeah, so, obviously coming into that is I'd advise to play Tomb Kings for numbers. So you'd have a strength is a big breakpoint. What was your breakpoint?
14,
yeah.
That is big.
So, weaknesses. Poor quality of infantry and cavalry. Yep, definitely. And there's a lot of it. So quantity has a quality all of its own.
It does.
Leadership issues, big ones. The lack of command distance and no initiative means you just need to roll those eights.
Not quite as bad as Lizardmen leadership.
And no initiative, of course. So Tomb Kings, aside from Vampire Counts, don't play like any other faction in the game. You have... you're all dead, and that is...
Vampire Counts have some living stuff, don't they, I think?
Ghouls.
Yeah.
So there's some matter to say, like, these are massive weaknesses of the army, and the fact that your poor quality infantry just really can't even it's a 50-50 where they beat goblins, for God's sake. It's like they're not good, the infantry.
It was interesting that I kind of toyed with the idea not running my brigades. Normally I have like archers on the front and then three units in line behind, and I toyed with not doing that because if your knights got in, they'd take all four.
Yeah.
In one turn. If I did it the other way, all in line, you could only kill two in a turn.
Yeah, maybe. So
they're that bad. Yeah. You really are. If I get charged,
they're all going.
All four units are going.
Yeah, they're getting crushed. So that's really the main. Let's say we've gone over those key points there.
So why would you play them?
Do we have another?
I don't really.
No.
Why would you play them? Why?
Fluff. Okay, so first of all, what tier are we rating Tomb Kings? What do you think?
I don't know. I'd probably say tier 2.
Yeah, tier 2. I'm going with tier 2.
They're not orcs.
No. They're not all bad, but they're not high elf good, are they?
Yeah. No, they do have some strengths, for sure. Tier 2.
You would need to be able to play the game quickly, really, with Tomb Kings. You need to be a player who can play fast, because your big army is going to need to do a lot of orders and a lot of stuff, and if you're a slow player and you're playing on a clock... This isn't an army that's going to work well.
Well, I mean, one tactic I have heard with Tomb Kings is that if you lose your punch, your big hitting chariots and bone giants, whatever else you're using, then they try and play for a draw. But there is no draw.
There is no draw, yeah.
So what are you going to do? You're just going to lose.
Well, that's the thing. Guard your punch better, isn't it? So I say, why play Tomb Kings? Though there'd be a massive army, I would say that they would be an easy to paint army, because dry brushing skeletons will look just as good as if you spent hours on them. They are a big one for the fluff, they're undead, very easy to collect.
Instead of dry brushing, you could not just spray white and then wash?
Yeah, you could do that, yeah. But you might as well dry brush then on top when it's dry. It'll take no time and it'll look better. You could do that. They'd be very easy army to collect because they're generic dead skeletons.
Easy. I've been picking up a few little bits and bobs on eBay. They're not particularly expensive.
No, they were one of the core armies, one of the original six to come out.
They're certainly not lizard men.
You could probably find GW off eBay for not too bad money.
No, like similar money to what you'd have paid originally.
Yeah. So
you need a lot of them, which is, I guess, where it happens. Well,
yes.
It's all right picking up one unit of skeletons, but you need 11.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you need 11. Why else would you play Tomb Kings?
They look good on the table.
They look great on the table.
A lot of stuff.
They're not the best army, but they're not the worst by a long way. And when things roll well for them, they're really good. They'll have some naturally good matchups, and that'll be dictated by terrain and what the iron opponents bring. Not necessarily like dwarves are like, for example, always a bad matchup or a good matchup, but there'll be some that, okay, so this opponent's gone for a spam of knights or something and a low army, and you're just going to swallow them up with numbers. Like, yeah, because you can hide stuff in terrain and then just get more as game goes on.
How I think
they're late game.
They win that game.
They're strong late game.
Yeah, if you can keep your punch.
Yeah.
You need to reserve your punch till late game.
Yeah.
If you can get off raised dead and win combats by one, that's all you want to do.
That's all you win.
You don't want to win combats by 100, you want to win combats by one.
You just don't need to.
With a raised dead behind and kill them.
Yeah. I think why you would play is the look, that spell list. And that's why I would play Tomb Kings. You could model up a little mini Nagash if you wanted to. Why not? I've seen that on the Warmaster Facebook group. Like, somebody's done a little model of Nagash, and it looks fantastic.
I find it amazing at 10 mil that people can do that kind of stuff.
Skill there is So you say, we've rated it as tier two.
Okay, tier two. Good for them. Right, so next week, I'm not sure what we're going to do yet. We might do another army list. We might do something different.
I think we should do another army list, personally. Okay. But like, as to what army list, we'll chat about this off air.
Okay, so we've got to talk about the future events again. Same two as ever. We'll harp on about them until they're done. Triwizard Doubles in April.
And April 30th.
And Warmaster Bunker. Bunker War Master 2 in July.
July 2nd.
Okay, and so if anybody wants to give any feedback, please hit us up at the Facebook page or the warmaster.podcast@gmail.com is our email address.
Yeah, so hope you enjoyed listening. Standard episode for us. I would just, plenty of scope to go into the future and say, like, I really enjoy playing Bretonians, so we could easily do some an episode about them. But there's plenty more seminal races in Warmaster to go through yet.
Okay, so that was Warmaster Podcast Episode 8 with Paul and Barry. Thanks.
Thank you very much for listening.
Okay, good night.